This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 106, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe and Netflix. And we're back at full strength.
Sorta.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 106. My name is Ron, and I'm here with Connor.
Hello.
And Josh. So we're here with your up-to-the-minute report on Josh Health Watch 2007.
I'm alive. Like, literally, I got out of the doctor the other day and I had like a CAT scan. He's like, you have to go have surgery now. I get outside of the building and I call Connor. I go, so I can't do the show. Like, I didn't call my mom. I called Connor.
That's what it's become.
Yeah. So the show nearly killed me.
But you're alive and you're on the mend, right?
Yeah. I'm sounding about as good now as I have since before that happened, because apparently I've learned there's no such thing as minor surgery.
It's not
your insides.
None of it's minor. They're cutting into you.
Ooh, they certainly were. I'd say I'm operating like 65% now.
Well,
I'm pretty good. You know, I can read.
All right. Well, that's all. That's all you need for. Can you talk?
Yeah, I get, right. if I get tired, you'll hear me just sort of drop off.
There was some concern about your ability to do your voices. Was the appendix the source of your impersonation power?
Well, let me try. Hey guys, how are? Oh no,
that was just wasn't a mutant appendix. It was a mutant voice box.
Yeah. By the way, the forums are the most disturbing thing in the world this past week.
Why?
There was literally, they named the general discussion, this is before anything happened, they named a general discussion thread, gastrointestinal disaster. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And then there was this whole other thing about my mutant colon or something like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of freaky.
I really did, like, listen, I really did have a weird appendix. Like, it was way too big and it was in the wrong place.
Oh, Jesus.
But in case anyone was curious, it didn't burst. It just, they got it before that happened. And according to the biopsy, no tumors.
Thank God. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Did they give it back to you? Did they get it in a jar yet?
No, they won't. They had to rip it apart to do that. So I guess I don't ever see it again. But the good news for all the people listening out there.
Wait a minute. You don't get the appendix? That's bullshit. How much did that surgery cost?
Well, I didn't really ask for it. I don't know. Shit, I don't even want to know.
Oh, God. I'm walking away from that with something.
Well, I was going to say the good news for the people listening at home is that I don't really have enough wind in me to laugh really loud. So your ears will be safe at least this episode.
I'll make up for you. I'll make up for you, Josh.
All right, good enough.
All right, well, let's get started. So you're okay. You're back. It's good to have you.
Yeah, good to see you.
And so, iFanboy comics, read them, write about them, talk about them. That's what we do. We're going to spoil the comics, so deal with it. Connor, what was your pick?
Astonishing X-Men number 23.
You guys got really streamlined while I was gone.
Yeah, we totally. It's a 20-minute podcast now, Josh. It's
And after that, we'll talk about the Illuminati.
Before we get into it, I was shocked and appalled but not surprised that you picked Astonishing X-Men number 23 and not New Avengers Illuminati number 5.
Why were you appalled?
Well, because I thought New Avengers Illuminati is what's going on in the comics world now.
Does make it the best book of the week, though.
Ah, you and your standards, Kilpatrick.
Joss Whedon, John Cassaday, this is their second-to-last issue. And damn, they didn't go out with the bang. Ron, this must have been one of the best weeks of comics for you in a while because you had two books featuring a kick-ass Cyclops.
I was feeling the love. It was pretty good. It was pretty sweet.
This is basically, if you've been following this book, the X-Men are trapped in the Break World, which is a world that says has captured the X-Men because they think that Colossus is going to bring about their doom. And the last issue ended with Cyclops dying and Ron being all sad. But we find out here he's not really dead. He's been brought back to life by the Break World people, which was shocking.
I would like to pause for a moment and say that I was very, very upset if Cyclops. I was going to be very upset if Cyclops died at the end of issue 22, but I was glad to see that he didn't. And we, you know, but now I'm very, very upset about what happened to Illuminati. But we'll talk about that later. So
we're not talking about that yet. We're trying to talk about the X-Men and Cyclops, and you keep trying.
No, I know, but the point I'm making is that I had like maybe a 10-minute reprieve between being upset.
Okay.
Like I was like,
you just live a miserable life at all times.
I was like, okay, good, everything's okay. Oh my God, no!
I don't know how to be happy with Marvel Comics.
No, it doesn't.
So in this one, Cyclops has been—he's been brought back to life by the bad guys, and he's been captured, and they're torturing him for information. And then, at the end, he sort of reveals to us, the reader, that everything we've known to be true in the last issue was not true, and then he busts out in a very dramatic fashion. And I thought was one of the most kick-ass action sequences / best I've ever seen a Cyclops in my comic reading time.
Well, now can we take a momentary pause and just revel in the genius leadership of Scott Summers?
Exactly. This is the week where I finally see him as a leader.
Thank God. You see what I saw 20 years ago.
Yes, but you had no basis for that.
Yes, he was a great leader 20 years ago. Cyclops can look at a situation and he knows his team's strengths. He can analyze the situation, come up with a plan, and then execute. That's what he's been doing since the 70s, and you're just all catching up to it now.
That's what Captain America does.
Well, yes, but Cyclops is the mutant's Captain America.
Right, but with more sexual sort of tension.
Yes, yes.
Weird.
Can I say that I was not surprised by Connor's pick, and I think what is surprising is I think this would have been my pick too.
Wow. Yeah.
Because what I was surprised is that this is a comic book that I have no reason to like. It takes place on Break World. I think that's retarded. I don't really care about any of these characters. And I'm reading it, and I'm beside myself by how literally good this is. And this isn't just a case of Joss Whedon, wow, he's doing a good comic book for a TV writer.
Right.
It's like, this is about as good a comic book as I could imagine being put together in like sort of this superhero you know, in that structure, you know, like using these toys. And I'm just reading through it. I'm like, my God, this is amazingly well crafted and put together. And there's just, it's so good. And I have no connection to these characters at all. And I was still just like, the quality of it alone was enough to make me say this is great. So I would have actually said it was pick two.
This is shaping up to be possibly the one of the best X-Men runs ever, and possibly one of the best runs, I think, in this decade. You know, as we get closer to the end of this decade, this is easily being one of the standouts.
It's really too bad that you had the delays on it, because if it hadn't been marred by that, it would have been easily looked upon like that. But now you have to look at it in whole, which is that there's been 23 issues in the past 4 years or however long this has been coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that'll get forgotten. And in 2 years, what we'll keep doing is telling people to buy the trades of these issues.
Yeah.
Right.
Or the omnibus when it comes out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as Josh said, the writing, I mean, Joss Whedon, first of all, really gets all of these characters. He gets the team dynamic. He understands the
X-Men.
He understands how they should interact with each other, not like any other team out there. It's really funny in parts. Wolverine, I think, he really gets well. Wolverine is the surly comic relief.
Yeah.
And it's not focused on all on Wolverine like some books tend to do as a crutch. You know, it's very easy to just to focus all the action around him. Whereas in this book, he's really a side character.
Yeah.
And it's also, I thought the brilliant scene where we relive a scene that happened in the last issue, but we see it from a completely different angle and see that what we thought happened didn't at all happen was really brilliant. And I thought it was brilliantly constructed art-wise and with the word balloons, who I'm assuming was Chris Eliopoulos.
Yep.
Layering in the old and the new world balloons. And it was just, I mean, there was a different bit of brilliance in each section of this book. That was the action at the very end, the middle exposition, and then just the fighting in the beginning. This was like a perfect comic.
The only one thing that stuck out to me was when Cyclops burst out with the optic blast, which is just awesome and like at full strength. How is Wolverine able to inch up next to it and blow off his handcuffs?
He's good.
Like, what are the odds, you know?
Well, that's where your master strategist put them there, right?
Yeah, I guess.
he's the best he is at what he does, and what he does is get handcuffs off.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I thought the last page was great. I mean, if you didn't get pumped up for the finale after seeing that, and the whole the meaning of the line, to me, my X-Men is Cyclops taking over for Professor Xavier,
which ties into what's going on in the Uncanny and all the regular line of books. So.
Yep. It was brilliant. It was just up and down. I read Illuminati first, and I thought, wow, that was really good. That's really possibly the pick. And the very next book I read was this, and I went, oh, forget it. This one wins. So.
Yeah, this is. I mean, and it's funny because if you compare the two, I mean, both were. And we're. I assume we're going to start talking about Illuminati now.
Well, one more quick note is that. I mean, we can't not mention John Cassaday's art.
No,
it's this issue. He's always really good, but some issues are better than others, and this is one of his better issues.
Yep.
Where there's not a single bad panel, and what I really love about his work is that all of his faces look different.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, Cyclops looks like no other guy in the book. You know, the women all look different.
And I picked up the Colossus variant edition cover, and like the Colossus's look is now defined by Cassaday. Like when I think of Colossus, I'm gonna think of Cassaday's, not Burns anymore.
Like, I'm actually going to say the same thing for Wolverine. When you go to those middle pages where Wolverine is fighting with armor, that's her name, right?
Yeah.
And you look at, there's the one page where he's flipping over the dude and stabbing them in the back.
Yeah, that was really good.
I have never seen that before.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And just like out of all the action poses that they've given Wolverine, and if you look at the shape of his body, you know, he's short and stubby. Yeah, he's always supposed to. I love how they've got him shaped and how he looks, and his mask is.
It's like the old Hulk one. It's the original Wolverine-esque one.
But he's
just got
like that thick, short trunk. You know, he doesn't have a long waist. It's done so well and so right, and it looks so distinguishable from everything else.
Yeah.
And the only bittersweet moment of this book is that you realize there's only one more issue left, and after that, Cassaday is taking a leave of absence from comics. So.
But
we're only getting one more issue out of him.
Brother need a pool.
it'll be worth it when he comes back, though. So.
Yeah, if he does. Sometimes those guys don't come back.
Well, I all right, well, let's not get distracted by what John Cassaday's career is going to end up doing. But the point I was going to make is that it was really interesting to see, you know, you kind of hold up Astonishing X-Men number 23 next to New Avengers Illuminati number 5, and you've got, you know, both ridiculously well-done comic books, both in writing and in art, and you've got one that has immense meaning for the whole comic line, the whole Marvel universe, and one that's standing on its own. And right. it's really interesting to see how in 1 week we get two examples of the best that Marvel can give us in terms of like, okay, fine, you don't care about the Marvel universe, be reading this book. That's cool. If you really like what's going on and the whole idea of continuity and all the titles kind of tying into each other, here's this one. And it's just like, you know,
it's not only that, but it actually fans out from just Marvel. This week was ridiculous. You can even say that Criminal 10, which also came out from Marvel ostensibly. Yeah.
It was a strong week for you guys. I mean, everyone keeps talking about what a strong week. I actually didn't. I mean, I it was kind of odd because I bought like one or two Marvel books last week, and like this week I didn't get. I think I just got one DC book. That was it. But like it was.
You were a Vertigo reader. This was a week for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and it was also like Jonah Hex. I wrote in the review. There was like five or six really, really, really strong books this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So let's move on to Illuminati then. The
Illuminati was funny because Ron and I ended up by happenstance reading it together online. Like we were at the computer and I was like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm reading Illuminati." So hold on, that's what I'm doing. And we sort of commentated through IM while we were reading the book, which led to an interesting experience of when the reveal happened when we both started shouting at each other over the IM.
Oh my god!
So this is where the Skrull invasion is revealed. Or the first major sleeper agent is revealed to be the Black Bolt.
And the big secret of the issue is this issue is that his name is ridiculous.
What is it? Blackgar Boltagon?
Blackgar Boltagon. It's like a bad video game script.
You see, but here's the deal, though, is that actually makes sense because if you look at all the Inhumans, and Josh, you're the Inhuman expert of all of us, they've all, like Gorgon and Maximus, and then there's always Black Bolt, which was just very un-Inhuman-esque, I always thought.
No,
so.
I'm not totally not complaining about it. I just think it's funny. It's fine.
But
this opens up. I talked to Connor and I was like, I don't get it entirely. He's like, well, that means that wasn't the real Black Bolt who got jumped by the Hulk. And I was like,
now that makes perfect sense. And so like
that's the first thing I said was, well, now it makes sense. That's the reason why he got beat down like a bitch.
So we're assuming everybody who's listening to this has read it. This is totally spoiler laden.
Hey, we gave the spoiler warning in the beginning.
Yeah, and everybody read it online. So the book starts off with Tony Stark. Sitting with Elektra Skrull body, and he's waiting. He's called the Illuminati back together, and I thought it was really interesting how the Gathering, because previously they disbanded, and the Gathering, you had the resentment and you had the kind of tentativeness of the Gathering together. I thought that was really well done. The pacing before he actually finally opened the bag, and then.
Killing me.
Yeah, and totally. And then leading up to that, it's Elektra's the Skrull, and you got the quick analysis, and everybody kind of accusing each other, and like I really felt the pacing of the next 4 minutes while they're all trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And then, not to get too wizard comicsy on us, but the comic moment of the year is when just Black Bolt speaks up and goes, I have a better idea. I take the body. And it was completely. I was not expecting that. Like Connor said, it makes perfect sense after, Black Bolt got his ass kicked by the Hulk and, like, some of the behavior that Black Bolt did in Silent War. I think I'm the only...
The fact that he knows sign language now?
Yeah. Well, so now the question becomes is that when did the Skrull take Black Bolt? Did he take him right before Silent War? Did he take him, at what point during the Illuminati series? Like,
that's the question, but I know that Bendis had originally said that in the first issue of Illuminati... when they're all captured, not everybody came back, which doesn't make sense because that was too long ago.
Right.
Which would mean Black Bolt would not have been Black Bolt for like 30 years, which is a clone, Spider-Man clone problem.
Yeah.
But so that's the other question. And then there's another, we'll talk about that. Then there's another big question after that.
Well, also, after he speaks up, the next page is a giant explosion, which I assume is that Skrull Black Bolt using his Black Bolt power?
Well, yeah, well, because if you understand what the scrolls started off as shapeshifters, okay,
right,
and then through their epic kind of war with the Fantastic Four over the years, the scrolls developed a Super Skrull who was a Skrull who could shapeshift into the powers of the Fantastic Four. So that's right. The Skrull with the arm of the thing and an arm on fire, and he half invisible and stretchy. Like so the Skrulls have advanced to the point where not only can they shapeshift, but they can pick up powers. And so it looks as if that this Skrull has Black Bolt's powers, because if you turn a couple of pages after he reveals himself as a Skrull, and then in the next page Namor yells Imperius Rex and goes at him. If you see, it's very subtle, but the Skrull shouts at him, and you see kind of the sound waves, and that's what blows back Namor. He's got Black Bolt's powers.
You know, and
not to the full extent that Black Bolt has them, but he's got
True. But then you see him bending like Mr. Fantastic later, lower in the page. So he's got, you know, Black Bolt and Fantastic Four powers, which is interesting.
Well, had,
you know,
had Black Bolt actually yelled at Namor like that, if he had gone grag, you know, whatever, that would have been like nuclear explosion. It would have just been a, you know, it wouldn't have been a sonic boom.
Right. Yeah. So they got some aspects of it. So so then that leads to my only critique of this book is that it got very chaotic very quickly.
Yeah,
and
it's hard to follow.
And the moment after Namor kills the Black Bolt Skrull, and then they get attacked immediately by two other Skrulls, that was the weakest moment of the book, because I didn't get that. How did these Skrulls know they were being attacked? Who are these Skrulls? And that was also the big freakout moment, because on first read, it looks like here are two Skrulls, and one Skrull to the left of the page has got Thor's hammer and looks like he's got a Thor costume on, and the Skrull to the right bursting has got Colossus's arms from the X-Men. And so immediately, and when Connor and I were IMing, immediately we're like, Thor's a Skrull! Colossus is a Skrull! And that would make sense, because those are two characters that have recently returned from the dead, and you could easily see kind of, you know, like, okay, it's the Skrull returning from the dead. But if they make Colossus from Astonishing a Skrull, and we went through all 24 of those issues and him returning and him being reunited with Kitty and all that stuff, a Skrull, talk about rip out my cold heart and stomp it on the ground.
No, I think the Astonishing has to be separate from that in a way.
Well, yes and no. I mean, but the thing is that I don't think that these Skrulls were Skrulls standing in for Colossus or Thor. I think these are Skrulls.
And if you notice, the Colossus Skrull has a Nightcrawler tail.
And he's got Wolverine's boots.
Yeah, so I don't think that's it.
So it looks like but there's a difference between the initial read and freak out, and then the okay, calm down and analyze and all that kind of stuff. So it looks like what we've got is we've got like a Skrull with like X-Men powers, and then a Skrull with like you know, Thor powers
Avengers
powers. Yeah, but damn. Freaking great book. Chung's art makes me want him on a regular book so badly.
It's nice how it all works in, because you didn't see it, you know, this was our pick of the week with the first issue, and maybe one of the other ones even, but like every issue of this has been so laden with discussion worthy bits, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is actually what makes Marvel Comics fun, I think.
Yeah, it's so deep. It's so good.
Yeah.
So.
We need to talk briefly about the new little backup features Marvel's put in the back of their books.
Oh, the magazine stuff?
Well, this is funny, because the first thing that when Connor talked to me about Illuminati, the first thing I mentioned, I was like, could you read that stupid back page?
Yeah.
And I was like, and there's just a little joke in there that Brian Bendis makes about Kitty Pryde being a nice girl.
What is the back page?
There's like, the very back one is questions that need answers. And it's, if you could date a Marvel character, who would it be and why? And they talk to Marvel creators and staff and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, and Brian Bendis is like, Luke Cage. I mean, Kitty Pryde, because I like me a nice Jewish girl. And then they have to put in front of Brian Michael Bendis, writer, they had to put Jewish in parentheses.
Yeah, because it's okay. He can make that joke. Yeah.
He's okay to say that.
Yeah. You
know, if it's not okay, don't print the joke. If it is, just leave it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also an interview with Matt Fraction, which reads like a FEMA press conference.
That's so smart, I don't even know what it means.
It's like, Arf is one of those characters that no one would have expected was such a mainstream critical hit. How do you think people are, why do you think people are so irresistibly drawn to this, such, you know, it's like softball of
yeah,
a softball.
Yeah, well,
I think it's a waste of paper.
Yeah, yeah. I mean.
Well, theoretically, if it's in a really big book like this, you're trying to sell more copies of Iron Fist.
Books,
I don't think this is the way to do it. But.
Well, this stuff appeared in the back of all their books this month.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, and that's what kind of threw me off, too. You know what it is? It does remind me of do you remember the one or two page bullpen bulletins kind of they used to do in the 80s? And you had Stan Soapbox, and they flirted with doing things like where, you know, Quesada wrote a column used, but then, you know, I guess he got busy.
I think that that's best kept as a one-page thing. DC actually does that fairly well.
Yeah, DC's doing it great, actually, with the DC
and
Nation.
And Vertigo
thing,
does it, too.
Yeah. I mean, I can't blame them for trying to – it looks like they're trying to drum up business for lesser books like New Exiles or Iron Fist, and then they're trying to, you know, connect the readers with the creators. You know, I mean, like, yeah, you're right. I mean, I skipped right through it, but, you know. But
no, it's
but if I'm a 12-year-old who pick up this book for the first time, I'm probably eating this up. You know,
yeah. Well, the first thing I did though was flip to the front and make sure they didn't charge me more for it. I immediately looked to see if it was going to be more than $3, and it wasn't, so I was fine. Okay. Next,
Uncanny X-Men 492.
I don't know what's going on. I may in fact be a Skrull because I really like this.
You know what this is? Connor coined this phrase yesterday. I think it was. This is an exoscence. This is a renaissance of X-books. We've got Cyclops, Wolverine, Colossus, Angel in Uncanny X-Men. I can't remember the last time that happened. It's been years. Yeah. This is the second issue in the Messiah Complex crossover that is shaping up to be a really good story so far.
It really is, and I really liked it. I was really shocked by it.
Yeah.
Last week was the Love Fest. I was listening to you guys talking about Messiah Complex, which I did try to read.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, well.
I don't care. It's not for
Josh, me. Josh, I think you should sit down. You're still hurting from the surgery.
I'm just saying, I don't want everyone to be like, oh my god, it's amazing. I thought I can't stand Mark Silvestri, and I didn't really like.
Oh well, I think we said the art wasn't perfect, but the story is. So
I'm not going to be checking this story out. But and if I you think, like it, I'm happy.
I think admittedly the art in this, Billy Tan's art in this issue had similar issue, similar
not
moments of weakness like Silvestri's. Yeah, but the thing is that the
Cyclops' visor keeps threatening to fall off in this issue.
Yeah, I know. It's just, but just the movement of the story and the momentum of this crossover, I feel as if this isn't dragging. It isn't, the pacing was still there from the special. So now, it was great to see, original X-Men members back in Uncanny. It was great to see the argument between Cyclops and Professor Xavier continuing the whole Deadly Genesis kind of, that major thing that Brubaker introduced. It was great to see Wolverine and Angel and Nightcrawler out in the field trying to track down Exodus, which I thought was, a cool, action that, to see like both plotting and action at the same time was pretty cool.
Right.
It was great to see Madrox and Richter come up to the mansion and strategize with Cyclops about what to do.
And Layla Miller too.
Yeah, Layla Miller. Yeah, and it was cool to see Layla Miller and Emma kind of clash as you would imagine them to do. It was just all in all, it was pretty neat. Now my two worries about this is that I don't know this Predator X.
Yeah, I didn't like. That's the only aspect I don't like.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I'm a little worried about. And then also, so the first two issues of the crossover written by Brubaker, now we go into X-Factor, we go into New X-Men, we go into X-Men, adjectiveless. How can the other writers keep them, will the story pace be the same,
So right. It's taking over for X in X-Factor 2, so this is going to be...
It's every X, it's like the Batman's...
Yeah, it's an old-school crossover, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
It was awesome.
Really good. It's been great, so... Yay, X-Men! Yay!
Criminal Number 10 is the last issue we're going to get till February.
Really?
Yep.
He did that with I was sick. What do you want?
They're taking off till February so Phillips can finish up Zombies, Marvel Zombies.
Wow. But he said he didn't. Everything has its price.
Yep.
Well. That's fine. I did read his thing about how he really likes the show Peep Show and then about some Canadian show called The Intelligence that I really want to see.
Yeah, that was in the same column.
Yeah.
I thought Phillips really stepped it up. This was an issue where there was a lot of just fantastic sequences in this book, more so than usual, I thought.
Yep.
Especially the car chase, which was a standout. He draws cars good.
Yep.
And apparently he really hates cars, or hates drawing cars, is that
Yeah, but
right?
He's really good at it.
Yeah.
It's funny is that I really had kind of forgotten where we left off. I remembered a lot of shit hit the fan last time, but like starting to read it, I was like, now where were we again? And I couldn't quite remember what had happened, but this was well done enough so that in issue form like this, I was easily able to get back on track. And I was like, okay, good, right. I remember what we're doing here. Yeah. It's like another great story, just another great, standalone set of what, five issues or something like that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You can't beat this book. It's unbeatable. It really is unbeatable.
Yep.
It's all around. It's Brubaker's best work. It's Phillips's best work, I think.
I have to agree with you, Connor. The one thing that stood out for me in this was the art. Was Phillips's art is that, and I feel as if he was gaining momentum throughout this entire arc more so than the previous first arc, Coward. But this is what a great culmination to have it all wind up, and even to the point of. Visually making the flashback, the kind of filling in the rest of the story about what happened with his brother and everything like that look, visual, the same kind of panel structure. And then, the use of the narration, I don't want to say balloons, but blocks, it was just in the slightly different coloring, the lighting being different on the flashback. It was just great. It was just a joy to read. So
Sean Phillips actually letters this as well.
Yeah. He does everything.
Yeah.
Oh no, does it? Val Staples does the colors. Yeah,
colors.
So, yeah,
yeah. He does. Yeah, he doesn't do the colors, but still, it's just like this is gonna be a great collection.
Yep.
And I love that.
I just saw online some people were let down by the ending and thought it wasn't satisfying enough.
Well, it's not really the ending.
It's not meant to satisfy. I don't think.
Right.
You know. Yeah. I mean, like.
I think he got his revenge in a different way for each person.
Yeah.
He wasn't gonna gun everybody down. You know, he broke the girl emotionally.
Yeah.
I think it's the thing, like, you know, these kind of stories, you don't get that satisfying ending. It's always like, it's rough, and it's like, well, I don't want it this way, but of course, you know, you're not going to get what you want. That's the point. The characters' lives are ruinous heaps.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Ruinous heaps.
That's the case. Like, everything that these characters touch is going to turn to shit.
Yeah.
So therefore, you're not going to get that ending where, like, the guy and the girl end up together, but also I don't think it's going to be so clean that he can just kill her and be done with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to be and you know what we've got now is possibilities for more, and he promised, he goes, there's going to be more Tracy Lawless.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think two arcs from now. Anyway.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Awesome. Another creator that we're actually big fans of, I just want to talk real quickly. I noticed Alex Robinson of Box Office Poison and Tricked fame came out with a little mini comic from Top Shelf this week called
Missed It Again.
Called Lower Regions. And I'm not surprised that you missed it because it's mainly like a third the size of a normal comic book. But it's actually really funny because on the interior, on the inside, you know, on the ISBN number, like it's really, you know, it's more like a book than a comic book, you know. But the library kind of suggestions of categories are fantasy fiction, Dungeons and Dragons, and graphic novels is the third. So, like, they're actually positioning this more as a Dungeons & Dragons fantasy book than a comic book. But it's a little mini comic. I don't know how many pages it is, but...
it's 56, I thought.
Yeah, 56 pages, and it's completely silent. There are no word balloons. Well, that's a lie. The only word balloons are, I think, some magician doing spells or something like that. But there's no dialogue.
Is it backwards writing?
No. And it's purely a warrior woman and her little elf friend going into a dungeon trying to save, I guess, her love. And it's funny because I'm not a big fan of Alex Robinson's art. Like, I know, Josh, you are, but I wasn't a huge fan of the cartoony aspects of Box Office Poison or Tricked. But it works here because he's drawing a lot of monsters. And what I was really surprised by was the pacing with the lack of – it's almost like a good exercise. With the lack of dialogue, the ability to pace the book and keep the action going, because this is just all action. It's just this girl running from the beginning of this dungeon to the end of the dungeon to find her love and killing everything that gets in her way. It was humorous at times. It was, you know, suspenseful at times. It packed a lot in this small package, and I was just really, really impressed by it. So
cool.
So yeah, it's called Lower Regions. Check it out. It's a fun book. You know, you'll
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Does he draw any cocks in this book?
Yes, he does. Monster ones.
Does he? Yeah. Are there monster cocks?
Yes, there are.
That's my boy.
Oh my God.
That's what.
Yep.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So if you're curious about Lower Regions or Criminal or New Avengers of Illuminati or X-Men,
is that the Lower Region they're referring to?
Yes, I think that's a play on words. Yeah.
he can't get away from it.
All right. So if you want to check it out, though, you can go to Jim Hanley's Universe. Jim Hanley's Universe is one of the best comic book stores in New York City. They've pretty much got everything. They've got, you know, mainstream superhero books to indie book. So, you know, if you head over to New York City, you can go where art and literature meet and go to Jim Hanley's Universe. They're located across the street from the Empire State Building on 33rd Street. In Midtown Manhattan, and they're also at 325 New Dorp Lane in Staten Island. And if you go in the store, tell them iFanboy sent you. They'll treat you extra special. And if you want to go online, you can go to their website at jhuniverse.com or to myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe. So tell them iFanboy sent you, and Jim Hanley's Universe, where art and literature meet.
More books.
Yes.
Jonah, we have no time to stop, plus I might pass out. I'm on drugs. Jonah Hex 25. At first, I was like, what the hell is this? And after that, I was like, that was awesome.
It was a really interesting exercise. It was Jonah Hex 5 years from his death.
Yeah.
Like, they jumped into the future and saw old man Hex.
You know what I love about this book is that they just refused – at the last minute, they refused to make Jonah Hex into a human.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be redeemed at the end, and then nope.
Well, actually, to be a human, he is incredibly human. I guess that's what I mean. And I don't know how it works, but like he just does the thing that you don't want him to do every time. But you still want to like him. You still want to root for him, and that's that amazing line to tread.
The art was fantastic. I liked. You can tell how well they know the character because he was the same guy, but just different enough in his old age.
Yeah, he was talking to his horse a little bit.
Yeah, it was really, really smart. So I thought this was a really excellent Jonah Hex issue. One of the better ones in a while.
However, I would say it doesn't really stand on its own. If you haven't been reading it, you might not appreciate it as much.
Robin, I mean, it stands
on its own as a story. But
yeah, absolutely. But it's more resonant if you know the character. Robin 168, Josh told me about this comic before I read it. He said he was really disappointed and thought it was really ham-fisted and badly written. So I went into it looking for that, and I didn't see it until the very end. I thought, oh, Josh was being a little overly harsh on it until I got to the very end with Batman and Talia, and then I got, oh, there it is.
Here I am trying to think that whenever I hear Peter Milligan's name, I think that he's going to be, you know, I for some reason I think he's a great writer, but I don't remember reading anything of his I've really liked, and this to me was just, everything was just being jammed down your throat, like, that it could have been subtle, but they had to make it obvious and just say everything that...
No, there was no subtlety whatsoever.
And I was really, really disappointed by this, and it really... And what I've read so far, it's turning me off this whole Ra's al Ghul thing. So I'm not so much interested in it right now. I'd wait till they get past it more than anything.
Yeah, it was a disappointment. It's a disappointment because Beechin's run has been so good for so long, and now we're waiting for Chuck Dixon, and now we have to have fill-in work. And
it's the yin and the yang. You got too much good. It's going to be bad sooner or later.
Three quarters of it, I didn't think it was bad, and then I thought it was bad. The last quarter was bad.
Yeah, I kind of didn't realize it was bad until after I was done with it. And I was like, I really didn't enjoy that. It's like the first time in a really long time that I haven't enjoyed many issues of Robin.
Josh, why is facing psychopathic supervillains so much easier than facing your own emotions?
These are the questions asked by Joe Casey's Iron Man Enter the Mandarin.
Are you guys enjoying this? Or
I want to just...
What issue came? I'm sorry, what issue came out?
This would be issue 3. I had no idea that this came out, and I don't know if that's just because I habitually skip over the things that say Iron Man in the title or what, but I had heard about this many months ago around the time that Joe Casey's last Marvel mini was wrapping up, that Earth's Mightiest Avengers 2. And basically what he's doing is going back in time a little bit to Iron Man in his more formative years and just doing an Iron Man versus Mandarin story. And so I happened to see the last week I saw the two issues of it in the store, and I picked them both up, and then this new issue came out this week. This book is great. And it's everything that you want out of a Marvel Comics superhero book, but like sort of in the time capsule of the 80s, which is kind of, you know, that's starting to be Joe Casey's sweet spot in the Marvel Universe. And it's just basically about the Mandarin and Iron Man meeting up for the first time. And it's just like the Mandarin posturing like every supervillain ever and talking a lot. And it's just like, it's a ton of fun. And the artist on this book, Eric Canete, whatever, it's really cartoony. It's very animated style. Not like anybody else's style necessarily. This book is great. Go pick it up. If you thumb through it and it's your kind of art, if you can get past the art, if this is your kind of thing, highly, highly recommended.
Cool. Wow.
Excellent.
I'm gonna check it out. So
I've been off Iron Man for such a long time. Yeah. This reminds me of how it used to be when I used to read Iron Man.
And I didn't even know it existed. It's gotten like press.
I remember getting advanced publicity and you know thinking in my head, oh, I'm gonna buy that because I remember you guys loved the Avengers book you did, And then again, like Josh said, exactly that's what happened is when I see Iron Man on the shipping list, I skip right past it. I didn't even think to look for it.
Wow. Well, the sad thing is that this happened with the Avengers series, too, is that nobody talked about them. Yeah. And nobody's talked about this, and I don't know why.
So we're talking about it. Let's get the word out, people. Go read
check this out.
Iron Man Enter the Mandarin. Issue 3. You can probably still find issue 2 and 1 on the back issues. All right. Did you guys read Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 8?
Yes, it was good.
Yeah, it was really good. I just wanted to call out real quickly, though. It was good, but despite like the... Stone Rose is mentioned in the dialogue, which is always good.
Yes.
Gratuitous girls bathing together?
Hot.
Well, yeah, but I was...
What else is Buffy really for?
But yeah, I was like, Brian K. Vaughan, really? I was like, you know, like, I mean, like, I understand, like, you know, whatever, they might change in front of each other and all that kind of stuff, but like, the bathing...
It's a big bathtub. They're not even close to touching. It's like a hot tub, really.
I don't know. It just seemed wacky. But other than that, it was... I know we haven't talked about Buffy in a while, and I'm really liking the storyline with Faith, and we finally
By far the best
this,
arc. I
mean, this is, yeah, this has been arc. The best arc, and this might be the best issue of the arc so far, even better than the Pygmalion issue, because it pulls Buffy into the story, and we get some conflict, we get some action, and it was just a fun read. So Buffy continues to be fantastic. You know what was also really good, surprisingly, was the latest issue of Fantastic Four. I think it was 551, I think. Dwayne McDuffie, and I forget who on pencils.
Paul Pelletier, I think.
Yeah, Paul Pelletier. I'm trying to, you know, I'm gearing after reading up on after indulging on the omnibuses, and then I've recently been getting the hardcovers of the Mark Waid, Mike Waringo run. I'm trying to get in the Fantastic Four mood for Mark Miller and what's his name, Brian Hitch's run. So I'm like, oh, I'll give it a try, give it a shot. And it just this book had everything that you would expect from the Fantastic Four. Is like they're, you know, there's a family, and then all of a sudden Namor, Black Panther, and Doom from the future come to stop Reed from destroying the world in the 75 years in the future. And it was just great. It was like this, you know, like the Fantastic. I sometimes subdue Fantastic Four to their own little corner. I almost ghettoize them to their own little corner of the Marvel Universe that I don't really care about. And I'm realizing that I'm kind of wrong in doing that, because they're fun stories. And I think we're gonna give this book a try. So so I'm on board, Dwayne McDuffie. You sold me. So
he's been on
You're
for
so
a while.
You're so fair-minded.
Yeah, I know. So.
Josh, did you gasp at the end of Scalp like I did?
No, and okay. I wanted to know because I thought that we knew about this.
Well, not as far as I know. I mean, this seems to be happening in real time.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. I'm trying to be, because I actually don't want to ruin it for people, because a lot of people probably don't read this in issue.
Basically, one of the main characters ends up, we find dead in a ravine at the end.
Yeah,
last,
but
the very last page.
She was already killed. Like, we already seen this. We saw her being killed in an earlier issue. I think at the end of the first trade. I think you forgot about that.
Possibly, but I gasped in it. It was really good.
Yeah, no, this was a fantastic issue. This book actually connects to that last one that was the pick of the week that we said didn't have anything to do with anything. That character shows up again, and they sort of bring us in right at the end of that last issue. This was one of those backstory issues where you get to know more about some of the characters that are making up the foundations of the story, and it's just all these solidly developed varying characters. It is fantastic.
You know, I hear you guys talking about it, but I literally have no desire to try this book at all.
Well, we
oh, you're going to
before.
Christmas is coming, buddy.
Oh, is it? No, but I don't. But I'm not. It's like I just don't even want it.
There's no other series that have sounded like that in the past that you like now.
Right.
Yeah.
True. I know.
I can't think of any with the Vertigo title on it that you dismissed.
I know. But it's, you know, who has the money to lay down another book? And you know, I don't know. Just it.
You do. You can afford another $3 a month. Are you kidding
me? I guess
I
could. I don't know. I don't know.
This is the guy who buys, you know, because, well, I like this guy, how he draws letters. you buy Corey Pettit books. Just because.
If you are interested in maybe trying out Scalped, if you go on their website, which is www.scalped.info, there's a I'll just read it. It says, "We, the creators of Scalped, are so proud of our new Vertigo series that we're offering a money-back guarantee in the first trade paperback collection, Indian Country. If you buy a copy and don't like it, just mail it back to us. We'll refund the price plus the cost of your shipping. It's just that easy. And now you really have no excuse to trying Scalped. The gritty crime series has been hailed by critics, fans, and industry's top creators as the best new comic of the year." And then it's got the address, P.O. Box 86220, Prairie Village, Kansas, 66208. So Ron, you really have no—you've got no excuse now. You can buy the trade. If you don't like it, you can send it back to Jason Aaron. He will.
I literally have no excuse to try this book. Darn.
Don't. You keep talking like that, and Christmas is coming early for you.
No, that was my poor attempt to lead into this. I think this is really freaking cool of what Jason Aaron and Armgar are doing. And literally, if you haven't tried the book now, just go pick it up and try it. If you don't like it, you can send it back to him. I mean, like, that's awesome. It's very cool.
That's ballsy, man.
It is ballsy. I like ballsy. So
yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's I can understand it because it's a freaking great book. Fantastic.
Yes.
So good.
All right. On to the email.
Our first email is from Fletcher from Canada. He says, "I recently came home to discover that my dog had taken a crap on my copy of Alpha Flight number 1. Fortunately, it was a fairly hard crap with little residue. Should I..." That's disgusting. "Clean up the cover as much as possible and keep that copy. Tear off the area of the cover that made contact with said crap and keep the rest. Replace the comic. Other factors to consider. The Canadian dollar has reached parity with the American dollar. How should this affect my decision? This copy is signed by John Byrne. Does this make it more or less valuable than the garden variety first printings of this comic? And do you think the presence of Mr. Byrne's signature had any influence on my dog's choice to crap up the comic?"
Wow.
How did it get to the comic?
Well, he left it in the bottom of the dog's pen.
Well, that might have done it then.
Yeah, I guess that's probably it. It's funny because I was like, that Oming issue from a few years ago, who cares?
No, this is the good Alpha Flight.
That was Omega Flight.
Yeah.
And he's Canadian, so that's like...
It's like his national book.
Yeah.
So what should he do? Should he clean up the cover? Should he tear off the bad piece or get a new one? You could probably get a new one fairly cheap.
Yeah, and you can still probably find it in the back issues. I don't know. That's a sad.
Having it signed by John Byrne is actually kind of cool, but if you're actually worried about value, I don't think it makes a difference. In fact, I think signatures actually tend to make stuff less valuable.
Yeah, true.
So that doesn't matter. But actually having an old Alpha Flight signed by John Byrne is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I mean that's very cool.
Before he went weird, and
But the thing is also is that I'm sure you could probably, if you could find another issue somewhere and replace it, you can go to his website and maybe try send him a message. Maybe you can mail it to him. Maybe he'll sign it for you. You never know. You know,
for $10,000.
Well, no, I wouldn't even say he's not one of those people John Byrne actually sometimes shops at my store back in Connecticut, and whenever he comes in, he signs stuff for free there.
Yeah.
So I mean, like he's not an ass. I mean, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. he's not always an asshole. So you never know. So
prank caller.
All right, let's move on. So our next email comes from Adrian from Hungerford, UK. Hungerford.
Wait, should I read this?
No.
No.
I think I could. Okay.
The point that's...
You take a break.
Adrian writes in saying, the point that, quote, some comics can only be read in trades because they're complicated is a standard reply in discussions on trades versus single issues. This kind of begs the following questions. Is complex a euphemism for poorly created? Even the most complicated stories can be easily swallowed when they're well communicated. I'd love to see different artist-writer teams telling the same story to see this in action. Imagine Bendis and Oeming putting out the same comic as Brubaker Phillips. It's a fanboy's wet dream, and you're guaranteed to a double sale. It would also clearly illustrate the point that good creators don't always put out good work. With comic book creators being portrayed as rock stars, isn't it about time for a battle of the bands? Now, this email's interesting because Adrian's actually talking about a whole bunch of different things in one email, all rumbled into one thing. Yeah, he really is.
So it's, I would say it's poorly created.
Well, yeah, I mean...
complex, I don't know.
I mean, to go from the bottom up, I would love to see a creator battle the bands where they both get the same script and
But then the writers are useless.
Well, yeah, no, don't make the writers useless. Then have them get a plot or a kind of thing and let them script.
But that's
Yeah, I don't know.
That's not writing.
It would be neat to see some sort of creator jam where you see a team work on a similar thing as the same team, see what they come. That would be neat.
Yeah.
But
it's easy to do with artists, where you give a bunch of artists the same script and see what they come out with.
Yeah,
but writers have to write something.
It's hard to be objective about them. And the only thing you do with artists is you could give them like a starting point and an end point, or like some tools and say, what do you come out with? But they would end up probably so different that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's all about pacing too. I mean, a Bendis book and a Brubaker book are totally differently paced. You can't.
But they also just tell different kinds of stories.
Sometimes, I mean, they tell very similar stories in the superhero work, but it's like you can't just hand them, say, script these plots because it's still not going to be their stories.
Right.
They plot it differently, probably.
And so then the question of, a story being more complicated, and easier to read in a trade versus single issues, that sort of thing. I mean, that's a whole big issue that I've been ranting about for the past couple of weeks. And like to say that comics can only be reads because they're complicated, I think I agree with you. It could possibly be a euphemism for poorly created. That's somewhat of a cop out.
I completely disagree.
Right, I do too.
Yeah, well.
Some books are really complex and have multiple storylines going. You've got to remember multiple things. Like a book like Checkmate is really, you've got to really remember what's been going on with all the different relationships and who the people are, because they're not always referred to by name. And
yeah,
and
what, I mean,
their relationships. And it's probably,
so then don't do Checkmate in a monthly book then.
Yeah, but that sounds nice. That sounds nice in a vacuum, but it doesn't really work that way in the real world.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that, change doesn't happen unless somebody stands up and says, I'm going to change things, kind of like what Top Shelf is doing, kind of like what Oni's doing, things like that, where, could Scott Pilgrim work in a 22-page comic book? Well, no, it works better in the digest kind of manga format, it only takes one person to try it to make it happen. And and the thing is that I'm getting really, really sick and tired of monthly books coming out and you complaining about the issue quality and then saying, oh, but it's going to read great in the trade, then just put it out as a graphic novel.
It's not the market, though. It can't work that way.
Well, but it can't work that way until you try it. That's all,
No, it's a lot more.
But you also have the choice.
Yeah, I mean, if you get the money both ways, why not get it both ways? That's what they're going to do.
Well, yeah, I mean that's one thing there too. I mean, and then is it just irresponsibility of the creators? Do the creators know that it doesn't read better in monthly books? And if
the thing about comics is they're forcing people to do two things at once, and that is the reality of the marketplace. And I don't consider that, and that's not just the creators or the publishers being greedy. It's also it's the fandom. The readers are very slow to change. And so sometimes, they've it just doesn't work like that all the time. Unfortunately, it's not a perfect world.
Yeah.
You know, like, the art of writing a movie screenplay is not the same thing as writing 12 issues of episodic television.
Right, exactly.
Well, but unfortunately, so, the way that...
But do we see TV shows that are on air and you're like, yeah, but this is going to be great in a DVD set?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, no,
actually,
because they're fun.
Better that way, yeah.
They're fun to watch like that right in a row. I can say that recently, you know, like, I've watched
The Shield is much better as a DVD.
Oh, God. The Shield is as a DVD because it's very complex, and I don't even think that's bad, but also it's so much fun, and this works the same way with Invincible, and I'm sure Invincible reads fine in issues, but for me, it's so much fun. I want to know what happens next, and I want to be able to go to the next one, and that's how I watch The Shield. And I, you know, I watched The Shield for the last season or two on TV, but the ones before that I watched on DVD.
More
I had much
more
fun. Yeah, I had, like, throw another one on. I just watched my 7 years of ER in the last year, and I wouldn't have wanted to watch that over 7 years.
Right, but then and we watched ER over those 7 years, and I have no complaints over watching. I had an enjoyable show every week for, you know, for the during the TV season. I wouldn't want to watch 7 years worth of ER in one direct run because it'd be too mind numbing. You know, like, I liked it spaced out. You know,
well, after the hospital, I gotta say it is a little difficult.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to a certain degree, it's kind of different strokes and kind of you guys will say this, I'll say that. But I guess the point I'm making is that if, and I'm all for the change in the industry and supporting the trades as the, you know, graphic novels as the new kind of format and stuff like that. But, you know, I almost feel as if the industry does it a disservice because they're trying to have it both ways. And that if you're going to do a book that's meant to be longer in a volume, just do that book meant as longer in a volume. And
yeah,
the company should embrace that format and pay the creators appropriately. But it's tough to change a monolithic iceberg like industry the way comics are. But, you know, that's
yeah, the industry's in a transitional phase right now, and you're like,
yeah,
you have to recognize
think
that.
About
yeah.
it 10 years ago, the way the market, it's slowly changing. It's just we're in the midst of it.
Right. Yeah. So I'm just saying, you know, make an attempt at it. Make change.
Yeah,
no, I know they are.
I definitely think so.
Right.
And now, you know, you have the choice. Like, I can say this feels like it'll be better in trade, and I'm pretty sure for most of the time I could be like, it will come out that way. So I can choose to consume it that way And I think I don't think there's anything wrong with me saying this will be better in trade for me.
Right. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with saying that I want to read a good monthly issue, you know, and there's some things I do like reading a trade. So, all right. Anyway, so if you've got any questions and you want to pit us against each other again, you can send us an email to contact@ifanboy.com.
And if you want to watch The Shield in DVD form, you can go to netflix.com, or they've got 75,000 titles, including all the Shield seasons. They got no late fees, free shipping both ways, super fast delivery, and plans starting as low as $4.99 a month. You can go to Netflix, www.netflix.com/ifanboy, and get a 2-week free trial at the Netflix.
All right. Cool. All right, so on to the voicemail. Our first voicemail wants to know what we think of a often maligned title.
This is Chris from North Missouri, and I was just wondering what you guys think of the Cable and Deadpool line. I recently picked up on it, and I think it's hilarious, but judging from the sales, it's not getting – nobody's buying it. So I was just wondering what your guys' opinions were on it. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, Chris. I hope I'm not the one to break the news to you that Cable Deadpool got canceled. But
David Mamet would have to write that for me to care.
But I think it got canceled because Cable died.
Did he die because it got canceled?
That's a good question. But we have assurance from Marvel that Deadpool is not going away and Deadpool will be back in 2008. So don't worry. So you'll get your Deadpool fix. Cable Deadpool is one of those books that the people who love it, and everybody else just doesn't care.
There's not enough people who love it.
Exactly. You know, Fabian Nicieza, whatever you pronounce his name, somebody will correct me, Fabian Nicieza, has got a great handle on Deadpool. I don't know if he had such a great handle on Cable from the issues I read. I didn't read a whole bunch of it, but it was enjoyable. I liked it. It was humorous. So
eventually he just tired of the...
Nice, very funny, Connor.
I think he just got tired of the constant calling from Rob Liefeld going, no, you're doing it wrong. Okay, Rob, I got it. Hang up.
More pockets.
It was like eight times a day. Have you thought about this?
Well, one of the great things about Cable Deadpool is it played up the whole Deadpool breaking the fourth wall and talking to the reader, which and the other people in the book thinking he's crazy. I love that. And somebody who doesn't like that is our next caller.
Hey, what's up, my fanboys? This is Rusty from Arkansas. I was one of those guys who wrote the diatribe against Why the Last Man about a month ago, and I got to admit, I picked up the third trade, and you guys were right. It gets much, much better, and pretty much every complaint I had kind of got taken care of. Anyway, I did notice, though, at the end of the third trade, there's a lot of self-referential humor, and I was wondering what you guys thought about that. Like, personally, every time I see a writer break the fourth wall, it just kind of takes me so far out of the story that it's not worth whatever joke that they're trying to make. Just wondering if you guys had any opinions on that technique, if you have any examples where it was done right. Look forward to hearing my answer.
What are you calling us and hitchhiking at the same time?
No, good thing you didn't get picked up in the middle of the call.
I thought he was going to get splashed by a bunch of water, like by a passing truck. Well, it's good that you ended up liking Why the Last Man. It didn't get better. You just wised up to it. That's all.
Nice. Good take on that.
It's been good from the very beginning. Yeah. You know, it's a really valid question, and I know what you're saying, and I think that self-referential – they're two different things, really. Self-referential is like the postmodern stuff where the characters are unknowingly acknowledging that they're living in a fictional world or whatever. And then there's fourth wall jokes where they talk to the audience. I rarely like the stuff where they talk to the audience. Self-referential stuff has to be used extremely sparingly. And I've never really noticed a lot of problems with that in – it's more like Why the Last Man is very pop culture heavy. But that's not really the same thing because that character is sort of –
I can't think of a single – I mean, I'm reading in trade. Sorry, Ron. And
I'm reading in trade too, so it's okay.
All right. I can't think of a single one of those jokes.
I don't think it breaks the fourth wall, but I think it's been self-referential to itself. It's been there's a continuity in why, you know, and there's been references to that continuity and throwbacks to events and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons why I like it, but I don't think it's a problem, but
not everyone can do it. It takes a really good writer to be able to do it and not suck.
Yeah. And I think Vaughn's a good writer, so yeah, but
you could say.
All right. So if you have a question or an opinion or want to call us in and hear us talk about things, you can call 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697. And be sure to keep it to 30 seconds. We've gotten a lot of voicemails over the past couple of weeks, and a lot of you are talking for about a minute, 2 minutes. We'd love hearing from you, but it's too long for the show. So keep it.
There's too many books coming out, quite honestly.
Keep it short and concise. So
short and sweet.
Yes.
Last week we had the Beowulf giveaway question. It was, what was Neil Gaiman's first book? And that was to win a Beowulf comic book collection, collector's edition. And the winner was the first person to email us with the correct answer was Paul Montgomery from Pennsylvania. And he had the correct answer, which was Duran Duran.
It was a biography about Duran Duran.
Which surprised us all.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Paul. Your book's in the mail.
Excellent. Or will be in the mail when they come out. So.
Right. Well, yeah. Figure of speech.
All right. Cool. And we also want to announce, that we talked about it last week. We're going to talk about it again this week. If you go to ifanboy.com/store, we've set up a little partnership with Amazon, and we've kind of made your one-stop shopping spot for comics, DVDs, movies, video games, whatever else you want. The holiday seasons are coming. We all got to do our Christmas shopping. I do all my Christmas shopping on Amazon, and that's, even before we ever did the podcast or anything like that. They ship it to you. It's great. Go to ifanboy.com/store. We're listing the books that we talk about on the video show. We're also giving our recommendations of just stuff that you can get from Amazon that we like. So a lot of you like to know about what movies and music and stuff we like, so we're putting up our recommendations. We're going to be kind of rotating those on every now and then, so be sure to go back and check. And when you do any of your Amazon shopping, go to ifanboy.com/store, and it helps us out in the process, so we appreciate it.
You can check out ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review and all the in-depth comic book discussion that you can possibly handle, important news and discussion topics, everything on the website you could possibly want. Go to ifanboy.com.
Hey, I just wanted to say thank you to all the people who posted on ifanboy.com and on the forums for, wishing me well and everything. I really, really appreciate that. So thank you.
Aww.
You're not dead.
Can you tell I'm fading?
Yeah, you can. Hang on. We're almost done. So every Saturday, our video show comes out, and you can go to ifanboy.com and check it out, or you can go to revision3.com/ifanboy. Last week, the show that came out yesterday, when you'll be hearing this, was we went into the vault. We were some recommendations, and the show coming out next week. I have no idea what show's coming out next week, so but it's going to be good, let me tell you. So make sure to go to Revision.
I don't know either. I have no clue anymore.
No idea.
I'm lost. Is it a tote bag follow-up?
Yes. It's the follow-up to – we're following up to the tote bag, to our books that we were recommended to each other. So good times. Yeah. All right.
So you go to, if you want an iFanboy t-shirt, you go to iFanboy – no, that's not even possibly true. You go to jinx.com/iFanboy. You can get a t-shirt with the iFanboy logo on the front, the intern – moniker on the back, join the intern group, and help us carry equipment at conventions.
And as we mentioned, you can always contact us by emailing contact@ifanboy.com or leaving a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697. Keep them short.
Yep, and if you can visit us on different internet sites, myspace.com, comicspace.com, verb.com, all those are /ifanboy. You can also go to Facebook, go to join the ifanboy group, and you can follow our musings on Twitter, twitter.com/ifanboy. Also, the three of us have our own individual Twitters, which we like to use throughout the day.
And if you dig the show, the audio show or the video show or anything with iFanboy, you can go to iTunes and you can leave a review. We really appreciate that, as well as tell your friends. If you read comics and your friends read comics and they're not listening to the show, go tell them about it. Spread the word.
Yep. And if you like the show, you want to donate some cash our way, you can go to iFanboy.com/donations, click on the donate box on the website, and you can use PayPal, send us whatever you like.
Yay. So, Josh, you made it through a show. It's good to have you back. We missed you.
Thank you very much. I expect I'll be better next week.
Okay.
Well, yeah, more than now.
He's fading. The Vicodin is wearing off.
Yes, and thank you again to everybody for the well wishes for Josh. It was, you know, it was a tough time.
Maybe just kicking in, that's all.
It was a tough time at iFanboy HQ last weekend, but we pulled through. So, notice how I'm making it like I pulled through, and Josh was the one who got surgered.
I certainly did. Immigrant punk, immigrant, immigrant, immigrant punk, immigrant, immigrant, immigrant pow. Immigrant, immigrant, immigrant punk, immigrant, immigrant, immigrant punk, immigrant, immigrant, immigrant punk. Yes, punk! Punk!
That's a real bell.
I imagine that Connor went out at some point this week and spent $40 on various bells.
I got two bells here.
Do you realize that is two bells closer to the morning zoo?
I just want something that's like a cow.